This week on Pop of Culture, Art in Bloom.
And it is by far the most exciting. This is the most exciting thing to do. It's because it's total creativity.
And it's a little more on the art scale than floral design scale. So I get to make things that aren't practical, I guess, out of flowers.
We talked to florists bringing artwork to life this weekend.
And we'll look ahead to the Muncie Three Trails music series. That's coming up.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and from you. Become a sustaining member of IPR and support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Kara Duquette. Later this hour, we'll get a full preview of the Muncie Three Trails music series with the man who created it.
But first, we start today with Art in Bloom.
The event happens every spring at art museums around the world, including the David Owsley Museum of Art.
The concept is we select those works of art throughout the museum, randomly assign them to the designers, and then they use their own skills, their own creative talents to interpret the assigned work of art through flowers.
Rachel Buckmaster is the associate director at DOMA. We spoke to her about the event last year.
I think they all take a different angle. One of the most rewarding things has been sort of recruiting a new designer to the project. It sounds really intimidating to them, but then the feedback we get is it helps them to think differently about their own work. Seeing something that they've created in the museum, and I think us really embracing the idea of flower design as art helps to just get, I mean, every year I'm really kind of blown away by what they create. So that interpretation could be literal sometimes. Some designers really think more about the concept or do research on the artist themselves and incorporate that into the interpretations. But so it's a chance to just see lots of flowers in the galleries and next to the work of art that they're interpreting.
And it goes beyond a bouquet,
yes,
right?
Bouquets, yes,
are beautiful.
Right.
But I would call them floral sculptures,
right,
perhaps.
Yeah. Definitely.
How do you get your designers?
Yeah.
How do they get the piece they work with?
Oh, that's such a, I'm glad you asked, because one thing that we're not always good at making clear to the public is the designers do not pick the artwork that they are assigned to respond to. So we have a planning committee, some volunteers on our Friends Advisory Council, and along with the staff, we sort of strategize in the fall what works of art in the museum might be fun to feature. I will say there's a little bit of strategy in spreading things out throughout the museum so people mm-hmm. have a reason to get in all of the corners and go through all of the galleries. And then we do a random drawing. So,
oh,
yes. So every designer thinks they probably were assigned the hardest one, but and they're all pretty challenging. So, and they kind of range from sculpture to paintings, all kinds of content. And they get a couple of months to think, brainstorm, and come up with ideas, and they all have their own approach.
And it is by far the most exciting. This is the most exciting thing to do. It's because it's total creativity, you know.
Sharon Grubbs owns Foisters Flowers and Gifts with her husband in Muncie. She first joined Art in Bloom in 2018.
I always have to tell my girls that if somebody's going to buy this, it has to be sellable. But this is more in that you, and you never can, I never consider myself an artist when it comes to flowers and stuff like that. It's just what you do. But with Art in Bloom, then you get raised to that, to be an artist in the flowers. We did Newfields last year, but we didn't do it this year because they have too many stipulations.
Well, now, how do you prep, you and your team, prep for Art in Bloom?
Well, Rachel gives us our picture, and we all go, oh. and then we look at it, and then, you know, we all have We all have input as to what we're going to do. Here, we want to do this or we want to do that. But you pick out what aspects of the piece of art that you want to promote. Like the first one we ever did, it was the, I think it was a woods one. It was really pretty and it had lots of color to it. And we created this box and then we made this arrangement that you could go into. We put stuff inside of it and so that you could see it. We use what helps create the form that we're trying to make. So whatever that is. So the second year we did the elephant. It was an elephant mask. It's a woven piece that's blue and white. And we had taken lily grass and woven it to make the pattern. And then we took blue delphinium and made the form of the elephant mask and stuff. But unfortunately, that one crashed and burned the next day. So it really wasn't, it was bad. But it was my favorite, so I don't know. Sometimes these pieces are hard because we had a ceramic piece one time. They're just really hard to, you don't want to be literal and make it look like it in the flowers. But sometimes it's just really hard to create, to figure out something to create with.
Well, Sharon, I have a question. How did you begin in the floral business?
I was working at Hardee's, and I played euchre with a bunch of girls. And they said the lady that owned the flower shop needed a bookkeeper. So I applied for the job and got it. And then I worked for Vera, her name was Vera Foister. And she had a shop in Hartford City, and then she bought the shop in Muncie, and it was in Keller Square, just next door. And so I worked for her until she decided to retire in 2004, and I thought it would be a good idea and convinced my husband to buy a flower shop. And so I've had it since 2004. It's about 21 years in September.
So you became a floral designer as well along in this process?
Yes. We're all self-taught. We've not had any formal training. The girls that worked for me, some worked for Vera, and then I've hired some since then, but we've not had any formal training. There's some places that we can go. We can go to some of our wholesalers, and they have showcases where they have somebody come in, and they design and show stuff and give you ideas, but other than that, we haven't had any formal training.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, you get to do this artistic flow and create.
Yeah, and if you would have said this is what I would do, I would never have believed you because I'm not that artistic.
I don't know. I see some beautiful arrangements around here. So I want to know what your busiest season is or time of the year. Is there one?
Yes. Well, like Valentine's Day is the busiest, is the most bigger money maker. But you do all that work in 3 days. And at Mother's Day, it's about the same, except for you get to do that in a week. And then at Christmas, you do the same, but it's in a month. So Valentine's Day is just really rough. But those are the three times of the year that you can make the most money, and it has to last you for the year because the rest of the year it's real slow.
Now, from a creative design perspective, which is the most busy time of year? Do you have an area that gives you, like in my mind, I'm thinking that people buy roses for whoever at Valentine's Day.
Right.
So is there a time when you feel like you have more creative license?
Oh, okay. Instead of just doing a dozen roses because we do have recipes that we go by because those make it easier to, once you have a recipe, then you just make them. To be creative, if somebody calls you and has the money to spend, then you get to be more creative in your process. So, but that's whenever. But during the summer is the summer, and then like August and September, it's a little slower. So you can create a different stuff then. You can just be creative every day, but it just depends on how busy you are.
I must say, your shop is beautiful, and I adore your shop cat.
Oh, thank you.
Flower.
Yes. We got her in September, and she is a nuisance, but she's very loving, and she greets the customers, and they just love her.
We're previewing this year's Art in Bloom at the David Owsley Museum of Art by talking to the floral artists who make it happen. Not all of them are florists. Our co-host Michelle Kinsey headed out to Wasson Nursery to meet with Marnie Tupling. She has the fun title, Director of Seasonal Color.
So how many years has Wasson's participated in Art in Bloom?
Yes, yeah, so this is my fifth year of being one of the featured designers. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, they kind of contacted us and had us do up some decorative pots for just to kind of decorate the entrance to kind of make it a little softer, kind of invite people in. So about 7 years total now.
Wow. And so can you tell us a little bit about the piece that you got this year? What was your challenge?
So mine this year, and I apologize, I do not remember the name of it, but... it's a really neat piece. It is a picture of a young lady sitting on a kind of like a chaise lounge sort of chair, reading a note that she has received, like a letter that she's received. And it's just a very nice, kind of soft colored piece of artwork. So. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different approaches to Art in Bloom from the designer's mm-hmm. perspective. Some are very literal. Where they try to exactly mimic or imitate exactly what is in the piece of art. Others are a little more interpretive. What is your approach, Marnie, or does it kind of change year by year what you do?
I think initially for me, going off of kind of years in the past, I kind of look at it and I think initially I try to take it very literal and try to make it that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, it seems like I always end up doing one piece, having it almost done, and then looking at it and last minute saying, this isn't what I want, and redoing it and ending up just kind of last minute putting something together, and I end up liking it a lot better. So
you're kidding. So take me through the process last year. So last year's piece was, what were you given? What did you do? And then how did that change over time?
Yes. So last year I had kind of a suit of armor.
Okay. Now I'm remembering what the piece
is.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
So initially I was trying to figure out how I could kind of make something woven, whether I take pieces of grass mm-hmm. Or wheat, something to kind of give it that kind of chainmail sort of look that the art that the suit of armor had, and kept trying in my mind, trying to figure out how am I going to make this. Never really ended up making something like that, but again, trying to think of, okay, do I had a helmet? Okay, do I get some sort of pot to try to flip it upside down to make this helmet?
Yeah.
And ended up kind of going with what I had last year, which I think was kind of like almost like a bird cage sort of frame.
Yes.
And had different greenery mm-hmm. going through it. I incorporated some yellow flowers to kind of give it that golden look that some of the pseudo armor had, incorporated a little bit of like kind of a dark purple bluish color to mm-hmm. kind of give it the hints of that. So it kind of went totally different direction, but overall it worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that people at the event vote.
Yes.
On the finished arrangements. Mm-hmm. Where has Wasson's placed in the last...
I honestly don't know. I think each time I always think, oh, I need to go back and check to see you know, if we've placed somewhere. Yeah. And I think I always forget to finally go back and check.
So it's not about that for you. It's about doing in the process.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's something that I do get to do a lot of creative stuff here working with annual flowers, but it's kind of a different sort of challenge for me and a different way that I can kind of use my creative side to create something different than what I usually get to. So for me, it's just kind of something fun.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your day-to-day. What are your job responsibilities? And then how did it feel when you were presented with this challenge? Be like, woo, that's something completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. So my main job here is the seasonal color. We offer four seasons of seasonal color changeouts here at the nursery, spring, summer, fall, and winter. So this time of year, obviously, we're getting ready for summer annual flowers. Mm. So my day-to-day right now is we do some potted stuff for customers and some in-ground plantings. So I design the way the flowers are going to be in their either in their pot or in ground. Nice. And I kind of get that all sorted out for the people that help me install it all and set it all out again and send them on their way. And between all of us, we get it all planted and looking good for them.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems like a wonderful combination of artistry, of being able to be very artistic, but then being outside and doing things with nature and plants. It sounds like an awesome convo. As I sit here, I'm starting to get a little jealous. So here
we can always use more help.
Yeah.
May gets very busy for us. You can help us.
So when you are, as you were preparing to create this year's Art in Bloom arrangement, what are you looking at? Is it a piece of paper and you're kind of brainstorming? Are you looking through things that you have in your greenhouse? Kind of walk me through that process.
So as soon as I get my piece of artwork, what I like to do is print it off. And I actually have it on my cork board above my desk. Yeah. So each day, at least I'm looking at it. It's something I can see and see if maybe there's something else that I'm noticing in the picture that I didn't see before.
Yes.
And then one thing that I like to do when we do all of our arrangements here or for the Art in Bloom, I like to use plants that people could, say, go out to their garden and cut flowers from.
Nice.
Or something that they can easily get in so they don't have to go to a florist and order all these pieces. So this year I kind of looked at it and thought, okay, what things could someone grow in their garden that I could use in this piece? And so that's kind of where I started and kind of gone from there.
Is it because you want those that are viewing the arrangement to have some familiarity with it? You want them to go, oh, we have that in our yard. And oh, what a unique use of this, because I've seen this before. We've used this in one of the pots on our porch before.
Yeah, kind of a little bit of that and a little bit of, I think if they see common things, then the floral design thing doesn't seem as scary to people or it doesn't seem as intimidating, because then it's kind of one of those where like, okay, I can take these plants that I have already in my yard and I can cut some stems from them and put it in a nice vase and it can look like a nice put together piece, or it can have that little bit of artisticness to it that you're adding to your home.
Oh, that's awesome.
Hi.
I remember you now.
I remember you.
Our last stop before the event this weekend was Julie Harmon Vance. She owns Buck Creek in Bloom, a flower shop in Yorktown.
And Julie, I think the last time we were here was almost exactly 1 year ago. And you were working on the 500 wreath.
Harmon Vance creates the Borg Warner Winner's Wreath for the Indy 500 every year. Along with Mother's Day, this is a busy month for her, but she showed us what she's working on.
Yes, this year I'm going to reflect a photograph. It's called Concentric Terraces, and it's by a photographer named Michael Chin.
And it is a very powerful photograph, a very bright red, kind of like some like satin and some umbrellas and against this very stark white backdrop. So when you saw the photo for the first time, how long, Julie, does it take you know, to come up with the idea for something to click and be like, yep, this is what I'm going to do?
So when I first see the photograph, of course, I'm thinking of different flowers that I might pick to suit the colors and kind of the overall feel. So this one, I felt like it definitely called for more tropical because it looks like it's on the rooftop of a special building in Malaysia.
Yeah, maybe a temple.
Yes. Sometimes it's quicker than others. This time it lingered a little bit with my thoughts on how I wanted to create it. But then as I started researching it and researching the photographer and also the meaning behind this concentric terraces, it really inspired what I'm going to show you this weekend.
And we are so fortunate that we are getting kind of a behind the scenes look right now, because as we're talking, Julie is actually creating the piece for Art in Bloom. And so maybe without giving too much away, talk a little bit about what you're doing right now.
Well, I am cutting the heads off a flower that I, in all my years of floral, have never seen before.
I've never seen this flower.
These are gingers, but I've always had them in red and pink.
Wow.
So I was able to get these white ones in.
It's gorgeous and it has a super long stalk, but you're cutting off most of it. And then the flower is gorgeous. And it, oh, that's substantial. That's hardy.
Yeah, the ripples kind of remind me of the temple.
Yes, I can totally see that. And you have three circles that are kind of,
kind of terraces. My circular terraces.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. So, Julie, how long will it take you to create this piece for Art in Bloom, do you think?
Well, I'm guessing I'm going to stand here a good hour or two, but I'll be back and forth all evening picking it and changing it. As I look at it from an angle, I'm going to see something that needs to be fixed, or I'm going to fluff it as long as I can before it leaves here. Yeah. So it's perfect in my opinion.
Yeah. So does the deadline determine when you're done? If you, yes, the longer it's here,
tomorrow,
the more you mess with it.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Why is it important for you to do this every year? Why do you do Art in Bloom?
I feel like it's something I do for myself because I really enjoy it, and it's a little more on the art scale than floral design scale.
Yeah.
So I get to make things that aren't practical, I guess, out of flowers. Also, I just love the museum. I think it's a hidden secret that no one knows what's sitting there and the beauty of it. And then, of course, all the people that work there are precious. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I love the ability to take a deeper look at the pieces of art in DOMA through Art in Bloom, because I think so many times we may pass by something and take it for what it is, enjoy it, it's beautiful. But then when you see someone's floral interpretation of it, it makes you look at it a little deeper in different ways, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Just like I did when I first got it, studying it and realizing maybe what the photographer was seeing, the beauty in the picture that he snapped.
Absolutely. Now, will you go to look at the pieces at DOMA this weekend once they're all up?
Yeah. I'm excited to.
Yeah. Do you enjoy seeing how others have interpreted the pieces of art?
Yeah. I'm a flower snob, wouldn't I?
I love that.
Art in Bloom is this weekend at the David Owsley Museum of Art. The event is open to the public. DOMA is an IPR underwriter.
Federal funding that supports artists across Indiana has been terminated by the Trump administration. They include organizations like Heartland Film, Windfall Dancers, and the South Bend Symphony Orchestra Association. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Aubriana Heron reports.
The National Endowment for the Arts, or NEA, has pulled funding from art organizations across the country, including in Indiana. The NEA awarded $265,000 to 13 art organizations in the state for the 2025 fiscal year. Jenny Werner is the executive artistic director of the New Harmony Project, a playwright organization that received cuts. She says the termination email was an emotional gut punch.
It was heartbreaking to have the support taken away from us and to have it be done in a way that felt insulting.
In the email, the NEA cites grant-making policy changes to, quote, focus funding on projects that reflect the nation's rich artistic history and creativity as prioritized by the president. I'm Aubriana Heron.
IPR is an IPBS station. This is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. You know that summer is just around the corner when the announcement of the Muncie Three Trails music series happens. And with us to talk about the great season in store for us this summer is Rick Ziegler, and he is the founder of the series. Rick, thanks so much for coming in to talk about the series.
Thanks for having me.
Ooh, and what a good one it is. First, talk a little bit about why you created this series and how it came about.
Well, I've been involved in music my whole life, and when I moved back to Muncie because of my mom's ill health, I wanted to keep being involved in music in some ways, and I knew that the stage at Cannon Commons would host just about anybody that wanted to come. So I said, well, I think I could probably do this. I have some connections from having run a record store and been involved with bands and, and the like. So that was the origin. I wanted to bring artists doing original music, not cover bands, but original music to Muncie that citizens of East Central Indiana in general would not otherwise get a chance to see.
And the concerts, we should say up front, open to the public.
No tickets required. And no taxpayer money used. All money privately raised.
Oh, great. So let's talk about this year's series, which is going to kick off May 31st, right?
Yes. And that the first band will be the Steep Canyon Rangers, who are three-time Grammy winners, multiple-time Grammy nominees, some of the best bluegrass around, basically.
You are not kidding there. You are not kidding. Absolutely. That's going to be a great show. And that one will be at Cannon Commons,
which has been
the site for the series for 12 seasons,
that's right?
Yeah. And then the next concert, June 13th. Tell us a little bit about that.
That'll feature the Harlem Gospel Travelers, who are a great gospel soul group out of New York City. And that concert will be the night before the Juneteenth celebration at McCullough Park.
Nice.
So it ties into that nicely.
And we were chatting before we went on air, and you said that their newest album, Rhapsody, is a must listen.
It's a great, it was nominated for a Grammy for Best Gospel Album. It's just fantastic. If you like gospel or soul, or the combination of the two, you should listen.
I do love the combination of the two. And that also is at Cannon Commons.
That's also at Cannon Commons.
Right?
On Friday, June 13th. That's the only concert that's on a Friday. All the others are on Saturday.
And I like that because it makes a whole wonderful weekend. If you're coming out for the concert and then you're going to Juneteenth the next day, what a great weekend that's going to be. The third concert, Blue Moon Marquee.
They are from Canada, and their newest album just recently won the Juno Award for Best Blues Album. That's the Canadian equivalent of the Grammy.
Yes.
And they're a duo, and they're sort of they aren't just blues, they do jazz, swing, but if for those of you old enough to know, they're sort of like Leon Redbone in a way. Very smooth, jazzy, swingy blues. They're great.
Awesome. So that's Blue Moon Marquee. And that
also
will
at Cannon Commons.
Yes, Cannon Commons, August 16th.
August 16th.
Right? Yeah. And then we're switching it up a little bit, aren't we?
For the first time, we will be having concerts at the Brown Family Amphitheater. We'll be having three of them. And the first one will be on Saturday, August 23rd, featuring Vanessa Collier. She's a sax and guitar player. She's a 15 times Blues Music Awards nominee and four-time winner of awards, including for Horn Player of the Year this year. And her new album was nominated for an award, Contemporary Blues Album of the Year. Mm-hmm. And also she was nominated this year for Contemporary Blues Female Artist of the Year.
Yes.
But again, that'll be at the Brown Family Amphitheater, our first concert of three to take place at the Brown Family Amphitheater this year.
That is so awesome. And you know what I love about Vanessa is that, yes, she's won a lot of blues awards, but I love that she incorporates so many other genres into her sound. She can get funky, soulful, jazzy. I mean, she's got it all covered. An amazing
performer.
First
time I listened to her, I thought of her more as a jazz artist than a blues artist.
Yeah.
But hey, that's all to the good.
She can do it all, which means that everybody will find something they like in that show, probably. So that is at the Brown Amphitheater. And then, guess what's happening on
August 30th. Someone that, you know, if you're familiar with local music, regional music, then this name will not be a surprise.
Yeah, to you, Jenny, right? DeVoe will be appearing August 30th. That concert will be our final concert of the year at Cannon Commons.
Yes.
We're happy to have her, Ball State University graduate,
yes.
well known around the area, has played everywhere. The Indie Star called her one of the top Indiana artists of the decade.
Absolutely, so. Without a doubt. And it's been a minute since she's performed in
Muncie. Right.
So if you haven't seen her in a while, you know, now's the time to do it. And that will be August 30th. August 30th. Yep. And then the sixth concert in the series. Tell me about this act.
Colby T. Helms and the Virginia Creepers. I found this act just by listening to their... He's only got one album out. He's just out of high school.
What?
The album, I listened to it, and I said, this album is great. It's he's country artist.
Yeah.
But a lot of bluegrass influence in what he does.
Nice.
It's just a trio. You know, guitar, banjo, and bass.
Oh,
bass.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right now. And he is just great. He's a great live performer. I would say see him now so you can say you saw him when.
There you go. Right. I love that. And that's September 6th. It's
at Brown Family Amphitheater.
Right. So on the Ball State University campus. And then the season's going to conclude another Grammy nominated. How many times have we said right. Grammy nominated in this conversation so far, but another Grammy nominated act. Tell me about this one.
The Afro-Peruvian Jazz Orchestra. They're a 19-piece ensemble, Grammy nominated for their debut album. And as you can tell from the title, they're a jazz group that combines, indigenous Peruvian music with African rhythms and melodies. And again, fantastic live band.
Absolutely. And that will be the season will close on September 20th.
September
20th. And that'll be at Brown Amphitheater on the Ball State campus.
So this year we are featuring music in the genres of bluegrass, gospel, blues, country, jazz, R&B, and world. So
I mean...
That's what we like to do. Wide variety.
And I love that. And I love, you know, again, when, you know, I've had conversations with Rick about, you know, how he chooses the artists. And he's very diligent about finding acts that many people in the area may not have been exposed to. Or maybe it's a different type of music that you've never even heard of or considered before. And I think that's wonderful, Rick, that you are so thoughtful about who you bring to Muncie so that everybody can enjoy it.
Well, the thing I miss about not having a music store anymore is being able to turn people on to good music, saying, hey, you should listen to this, you should listen to that. So that's the series sort of substitutes for that for me.
On a little bigger level.
Yeah.
Here, let me put them on a stage for you and, you know, 1,000 of your closest friends, right? That's awesome. And could you talk a little bit about Muncie Three Trails music series and why it's called that?
Well, I mean, there's two reasons. One is we wanted to find a catchy name. And the idea of talking this over with my wife was, well, I want people to say, oh, I'm going to the Three Trails, you know, and, you know, something like that. But the more important reason is that the concert series, there were two goals. One, as I've said, to introduce people to music they may not otherwise know that's really good.
Yeah.
And the second is to promote Muncie itself and the other things that Muncie attractions has. And so the Three Trails, Cardinal Greenway, White River Greenway, Muncie Arts and Culture Trail, sort of plays into that. And usually, if I have enough time to, you know, I'll usually promote other things like the David Owsley Museum or Minna Trista or Cornerstone Center for the Arts, just trying to get people to come to the concerts to realize, hey, there's more than just this concert in Muncie. There's all these other things that you can do.
Absolutely. And do all of the concerts start at the same time, Rick? Give me an idea.
They all start at 7 with the opening act, and the headliners go on at 8.
All right. So where did the connection come with the Brown Family Amphitheater? Why did you want to do that?
Well, actually, I was approached by President Mearns.
Nice.
He wanted to meet with me, and I was afraid. The Ball State has been very generous in helping to fund the Three Trails music series. Mm-hmm. They've been a prime sponsor for the last few years. And so I was afraid that, he's going to call me in and say, well, we can't afford to do this anymore. But no, it was the exact opposite. He said, hey, we want to get more programming at the Brown Family yes. Amphitheater. You have a successful thing going here with the Three Trails. He had been to some of the shows at Cannon Commons, and they agreed to help fund the additions.
Right. So, yeah. I don't think anybody's going to complain about more music.
Yes.
Darn it, Rick. You're adding more music. Well, this is great. We are really looking forward to kicking off summer with the Muncie Three Trails music series. And Rick, thank you so much for coming in and letting us know about all the great opportunities this summer. And we'll see you at the Three Trails.
I hope so. Thank you.
Rick Ziegler is the founder of the Muncie Three Trails music series. You'll hear more from the artists on this year's lineup throughout the series, right here on Pop of Culture.
You're hearing Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. When you own an art supply store with a constant flow of artists in and out, what do you work on?
Karen Fisher is an artist and arts advocate who has had a long relationship with Muncie. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can you start by sharing with us what drew you to Muncie initially and what keeps you here?
Well, I came to Muncie in 1972 to go to Ball State. I was an art ed major and finished in 76 and already had my plans made to get out of Muncie.
As some do.
But things changed when I met Paul Fisher, right as I was, just after I graduated, I think, probably within just a couple of days. And we started hanging out together and just liked each other quite a lot, still dig each other a lot. And we got married, and so he is a Muncie guy, and he had been away from here, and then he moved back, and he had no desire to move away again, despite my badgering, my begging.
So he showed plans. You the joys of Muncie.
Yes, yes. And so 20 years later, I finally realized that I wasn't going anywhere, and so that's when I tried to start getting involved in things in Muncie and thought, if I want a better community to live in, I better do something to help that.
Well, I know that you've done quite a lot of things in Muncie. Can you talk about your art journey and how it specifically began here beyond your degree at Ball State?
Well, I took a long hiatus from artwork after I finished school. I think people do that because you get so crammed up with what your, you know, assignments and that type of thing. So I took a hiatus, but then I worked for Gordy's for a while, Brian and Jenny, and started getting back into the artwork and started painting again and entering shows and starting to get some things into shows. And since then, I've just tried to take off and with working in an art supply store, you know, people are constantly giving you samples of different products to try out. So I've run the gamut on art materials that I use, and I'm kind of stuck on pastels right now and have been for the last few years. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those people who don't know, Art Mart, which is owned by Karen and her husband, Paul, was previously owned by the Gordys, and it was called Gordy's Art Mart.
Right, right. They owned it for 25 years, and we have now owned it for 23 years. And it has been a local business, though, since the 50s sometime. It didn't start as Art Mart, but it did start as Muncie Glass and Paint. And then went to Kim's Art Mart, Bennett's Art Mart, Gordy's Art Mart, and then just became Art Mart.
Well, it's a wonderful resource in our community. And you were talking about that you're stuck on pastels. I would like to know if that's your favorite medium or is that the medium of the day?
It's kind of the medium of the year. I have been working with pastels for about the last 5 years. Once I started, I realized that it was faster than oil paints, because that was kind of my thing for a long time, but it was still a very similar process, just with a dry material instead of a wet material. So you really do paint with pastels more than draw with pastels. So I felt like I was doing my same kind of techniques, just with a dry medium. My husband said one time, why don't you just pick one thing and get good at it? My reply to him was, I wouldn't know what one thing to pick because I like all the mediums, but I really do feel like pastel is my favorite right now.
Right now. Yeah. Well, you deal with so many different mediums and brands at the Art Mart. Could you talk a little bit, can you talk us through maybe a piece that you're enjoying right now? What inspires you to create?
I just had a conversation with one of the art professors the other day about subjects that we do for our artwork. And I said, you know, I gave up trying to be a commercial, trying to sell a lot of artwork. That's really not my goal. But my subject are the things I like. I collect all kinds of different things. And so usually my subject is parts of my collection, parts of a couple collections put together. If I see something that just really strikes me, I usually take some photos of it if I can. I'm really not a floral person. I'm not really not a landscape person, but I love architecture. And so usually there's some architecture included in somewhere within the painting. Right now I just had a piece at the Minatrista show, and it was bells that hang on my front door. And now I'm working on a companion piece of bells that hang on our back door. So the two doors are very different. The two sets of bells are very different. But since they're doors and bells, they'll go together.
Now, are these pastels that you're working
with? Yes, pastels. I'm using pan pastels right now. It's a soft pastel that you use a sponge applicator with.
And so what color palette do you utilize?
I tend toward neutral colors. I've never met a green that I didn't like. So I try to put green somewhere, even if it's an undertone, because green will bring out so many colors that are close to it, complementary colors that are close to it. So usually neutrals and very light, subtle colors, not super bright or bold colors.
Do you stay true to the items that you photographed?
Sometimes, not always. It depends. If I think another color would go better with what I'm working on, I will use the other color. It's my interpretation of what I'm seeing. So I don't feel like if I wanted a photo, I already have one. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be reproducing it. And so I'm not trying to stay totally true to that photo because I don't have to.
No, that's one of the beauties of art.
That's right. That's right.
Well, can you tell us where we can find your artwork?
I don't have anything out there right now.
Okay. But can we find you online?
No.
Okay. That's all right. No. I was just asking. Well, Karen, it's been a pleasure to speak with you today. And thanks for being here.
Oh, I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Cara.
Okay.
Hey, Cara.
Hey, Jen.
Spring is officially springing.
Hip, hip, hooray.
Which means it's time for the arts calendar. Why don't you kick us off?
I sure will. Warm weather means food truck Friday at Ivy Tech in Muncie. Every Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Head down for an alternating schedule of food trucks serving up lunch. Next Thursday, May 23rd, is Los Amores. The Ivy Tech building is located at 345 South High Street in Muncie.
I love food trucks.
Oh, yeah.
They're the best. All right, Friday night, May 16th, the Gas City Performing Arts Center lights up with Free Fallen, the Tom Petty concert experience. Touring internationally for 17 years, this band provides the entertaining experience of all of Tom Petty's big hits in one night. The show starts at 7:30, and tickets are at gascitypac.com.
That makes me really happy because Tom Petty was amazing.
Amazing. Hey, Kara.
Yeah?
Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
Yes, I can.
Well, maybe I can tell you. Okay, so this weekend, those directions lead to the Honeywell Center, Ford Theater, and Sesame Street Live. Yay. Join Elmo, Cookie Monster, and all their friends as they invite you to sing and dance along, all while you follow Elmo's puppy Tango in a fun game of hide and seek. No word if Rocco the Rock will be in attendance. But that's Saturday, May 17th at 2 p.m. Tickets are at honeywellarts.org.
Thanks for telling me how to get to Sesame Street.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Speaking of the Honeywell Center, the 1324 Drive-In is back for the season starting next weekend. May and June's lineup includes new movies like the live-action Lilo and Stitch and classics like Forrest Gump, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and The Notebook. Showtimes are at the same website, honeywellarts.org/movies.
Oh, yeah. Remember that, Forrest Bueller?
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Okay.
If you still need plans for Memorial Day weekend, join the impromptu fun fly at the Academy of Model Aeronautics in Muncie. If you have an RC aircraft, bring it. If you don't, bring a chair and watch the fun. The event takes flight Friday, May 23rd, all day from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The AMA is at 5161 East Memorial Drive in Muncie. You can also find them online at modelaircraft.org.
I've done this before. The detail on these planes is incredible. Like, it's really, really fun to watch. You should definitely check that out. The long-running summer Minitrista program, Fairies, Sprites, and Lights, is holding auditions for folks 18 and older on June 2nd and 3rd, beginning at 5:30 p.m. The auditions are at the Ed Center, which is the cabin in the middle of Oakhurst Gardens. Bring yourself a bottle of water and your improv skills. The event itself is July 24th, 25th, and 26th at Minitrista Museum and Gardens. For more information, head on over to minitrista.net.
It's amazing to see all the littles dressed
up. Oh my God, that's so cute.
In their fairy costumes. Do you know a magical event that Pop of Culture listeners should hear about? Wave your magic wand or point your cursor to indianapublicradio.org/contact and then select Pop of Culture.
Bring.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and from you. Become a sustaining member of IPR and support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. Our art director is Tracy Lauk, and our producer is Luke Jones, who always brings the magic. This week was hosted by me, Jen Blackmer.
And me, Kara Duquette. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the magical campus of Ball State University.